Tyreek, I'm going to get to you from D.C. before I get to this whole NAACP history as it relates to their anti-lynching efforts. Tyreek is calling from D.C. Go ahead. You're on with my guest, Dr. Manfred Berg. The book is Popular Justice, A History of Lynching in America. Go ahead.
Did Asa Philip Randolph participate, his sleeping car porters, and the Colored Women Association also along with this anti-lynching bill?
Well, virtually every black... Thank you for your question. Virtually every African-American civil rights organization, every charitable organization supported anti-lynching legislation. It is arguably the most important civil rights issue in the early 20th century that really rallies African-Americans. The one thing that everyone could agree on and would consider as the most urgent concern in many ways. So Randolph, black women, they all played a very important role. But obviously, as Joe has already pointed out, Congress never passed such a law.
Okay, Tariq? Okay, I guess that answers the question.
Thank you.
Well, let's go back. A couple of things come to my mind. First of all, it's got to be one of the let's talk about the reasons. In your book, you talk about how, of course, Congress is very Southern dominated. The committees that this bill has to go through are dominated by Southern men.
Well, first of all, there's the constitutional argument. The opponents of an federal anti-lynching law always argued that lynching was murder, and murder
is a state issue.
A state prerogative. Therefore, Congress has no constitutional authority to legislate. Now, there were many bills that were introduced all the same, arguing that under the 14th Amendment, Congress had power to enforce the equal protection of the laws, and that states who permitted lynching or did not do anything against it, denied their citizens, in most cases their African-American citizens, the equal protection of the laws.
But obviously nullification of all federal laws.
Exactly.
Or
but the problem was that Southern senators in particular used the filibuster to obstruct the passing of anti-lynching laws successfully for decades. The NAACP introduced the first, congressman from Missouri, Leonidas Dyer, introduced an anti-lynching law that was in close association with the NAACP in 1918. And the campaign went on until the early 1950s. And by the 1930s, the House of Representatives would pass these anti-lynching bills with huge majorities, but it would always fail in the Senate because the Southern veto group of senators, they would filibuster until it was dead.
Now, and so so the other question that I have, It relates to your book, Popular Justice, The History of Lynching in America. One has to investigate these lynchings. First of all, who did it? How do you get a record of what lynchings happened? Who did the investigation? And I know that Walter White played a major role. He could sort of get away with it because Walter White often passed. But what's that history about?
Well, you are talking about a very important problem for historians because usually when a lynching happened, the coroner would say that the person had died at the hands of parties unknown, and that was it. Now, the NAACP began to investigate lynchings, and obviously they sent people who were either not African American, or such as Walter White, he was so light-skinned that he could easily pass for a white person. But nevertheless, this was very dangerous work, and some of the NAACP investigators actually had close calls with the mob themselves.
Now, these were white investigators.
These were some of them were white. Obviously, lynch mob members wouldn't talk to a black person.
That person would be very much
in danger. Now, the other major source that we as historians have are newspaper reports, but they're very unreliable.
Why?
Because there's a lot of hearsay, and they would, for example, the question, what crime triggered a particular lynching? Usually, if it's a white newspaper, they would take it for granted that the person who was lynched actually committed the crime.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
For example, Walter White, often what he finds out is very different from what you read in the newspapers. The newspapers would usually assume, that a group of righteous citizens had hunted down a dangerous criminal mm-hmm. who got his just deserts. That would be
the headline.
It would be the standard story. Then if you look deeper into what really happened, it comes out that maybe there were other issues involved.
So was before I go to next caller, was there a lull at some? I mean, first of all, let's go back. There's no way of determining, as I think your book points out, how many people were lynched.
Well, we have
your estimates are what?
We have the statistics that were gathered by the NAACP, by the Chicago Tribune, by the Tuskegee Institute that amount to roughly 5,000 lynchings from the 1880s to the 1950s. But this number is extremely conservative. What we do not know at all is the amount of lynchings and race, people who perished in race riots during Reconstruction, which is would be we're talking about tens of thousands.
Now, you're talking during people. Reconstruction during, or at the end of Reconstruction?
During Reconstruction. So I wouldn't even venture to come up with an estimate because we don't know how many slaves, for example, were lynched. It's impossible to know. But the important thing is that we have a record for quite a few cases, and that we can try to discern the patterns mm-hmm. that triggered lynchings. We know something about resistance against lynching, which is also an important factor. And we also know how change over time happened, slowly
All
but
right.
steadily.
I have a minute before the break. Here's the question I'd like to pose to you, and that is, we often associate lynching with southern states, but that there was northern lynching that took place also.
Absolutely.
Indiana was infamous because that was a headquarters for a long time of Klan.
Absolutely. And also the western states, of course, with their frontier justice tradition, have fairly high proportions of lynchings if you look at them on a per capita basis.
Mm-hmm.
However, lynching in the West ceased much earlier than in the South. It basically ceases in the late 19th, early 20th century. So lynching in the South, it takes another 30, 40 years until the practice really dies down. But the only region that has practically no lynchings is New England.
Hmm.
perhaps for its abolitionist tradition.
Yes, I was going to say, Well, all right, we'll continue. And hold on, Eugene, and we'll take other calls, 1-866-801-8255. Let me fast forward to post-World War II, because, again, there was an uptick of lynching and a lot of and resistance also, I would think, during that period of time. Here you had soldiers returning, and we know of a lot of infamous cases of soldiers being lynched, you know, in their uniforms, who have served the United States. And I know you write about that. And then, of course, there's the Emmett Till case that you also discuss in the book, which part of my generation that really impacted us socially as baby boomers. We'll continue. Don't go anywhere. The book is Popular Justice, A History of Lynching in America. My guest in studio, Manfred Berg. Dr. Berg is with us.